This is Julian Clover on Cambridge 105 Radio.
The orchid family is one of the largest plant families in the world. Over 25,000 different species, as we said earlier on, can be found across every continent apart from Antarctica. Orchids are found from the Arctic tundra to tropical forests, growing on rocks in soil, high up, suspended on other plants, and even underground. Their exotic nature continues to keep enthusiasts enamoured and enraptured. Many different species of orchid are on display at the moment in the warmth of the Cambridge University's Botanic Gardens Glasshouse Range for Orchids 2018, an exhibition, How to Build an Orchid. Making time to join us this morning and a welcome return to our studios is the Glasshouse Supervisor in the Gardens, Alex Summers. Good morning to you.
Hi there, Phil. How are we doing?
Nice to see you again. You've been in for a couple of times previously to see us. Last time, you'd been gadding around, young man, in December 2016 it was. You'd been in North Vietnam. I think it was, wasn't it? Doing some
discovery. It's not quite as exotic this time. No. Although exotic in different ways, should I say. We've been busily rolling out our Orchid Festival. We do this, as many of our regular visitors will be aware, we do this each year. And this year, we were very, very keen to take our Orchid Festival and just draw it back to basics, I think, because so many of our visitors come through and within the whole collections, they can pick out orchids without necessarily even seeing the label that says orchid on it. And what we kind of wanted to do was pass on the detail that of what makes an orchid, so from the roots, like you say, right up to the flowers, what are those key parts of a generic orchid plant that make them all fall within the same grouping or family?
You've got a nice easy job. You come today in your shorts, kind of showing off, I suppose. It's only about 7 degrees Celsius outside. But I suppose the nice thing about what you do is you're inside most of the time. Orchids need to grow, presumably, at a certain fairly warm temperature.
So orchids, as you said when introducing it, come from pretty much all continents except Antarctica. So if people go down to the Fens in June time, or even if they go around to Cambridge Airport and the verges there, they'll see orchids flowering. However, the orchids that we tend to use within the Glasshouse range are all tender, and actually a large part of the orchid family come from the tropics. I think somewhere in the realms of about 70% of all orchids, so that's somewhere in the realms of 25,000 species, are epiphytic, and all of those epiphytic ones, so they grow on other plants, come from the tropics.
I hadn't realised until recently we were featuring the Cambridge Natural History Society and the fact that mistletoe is a sort of parasitic. It actually grows in clumps and clusters, and there's plenty of that on Maddingley Road. So some of these orchids can grow sort of in trees, on old tree barks.
Yes, so what we're looking at when we deal with orchids is we're looking at what we would call an epiphyte. So they grow on the tree without taking anything from the tree. Essentially, the tree is just a structure for them on which they can sort of plant themselves. However, when we consider something like mistletoe, which is a parasite, that plant actually plugs itself into the tissues of the tree or plant that it's on, and then takes water and other resources such as sugars from the plant and uses it for its own benefit. So in the case of mistletoe, which people will see lots of in the garden at this time of year, covered in its white berries, that is a very good example of a parasite, but we have many others around the Cambridge area as well.
So if orchids don't need to tap into the sugars and any of hydrate from the tree, then how do they get their nutrition?
So they're just like any other standard plant. They've got green leaves, they photosynthesize, so they take sunlight energy and use that to produce sugars. But like I say, within the forest environment, they have evolved the ability to be epiphytes, so they're able to grow on other plants. And what that allows them to do is it allows them to compete better for light and other resources. So if you can imagine, once the tree is plugged into the ground there, if you can get yourself growing on a limb or a branch of a tree, then it's a perfect area in which you can access light, and light in a rainforest environment is actually a resource that's quite limited by the fact that you've got that huge canopy up above you.
And the Glasshouse range, how many species have you got in there that you are showing us at the moment?
A horrible question to ask me.
Probably a few you don't know about.
we've got a lot. We hold a lot of orchid species, nowhere near the 25,000 that there are. But, you know, we tend to think about plants at the garden as accessions. So an accession is an individual plant that we brought in. So we might have multiple accessions of the same species, so multiple examples of the same species. But when it comes down to the number of plants, I think we've got about, I would say we've got somewhere in the realm of about 500 orchid plants currently in flower in the Glasshouses. How many species there? That'll be a lower number, somewhere in the realms of 50, 60, 70 species.
Do you have to try to play with nature a little bit, Alex, and time the flowering or blooming. Some of them are going to frustrate you, presumably. They're still at bulb stage, or they're just still at shoot stage. You've got the scientific words for those, I know. Obviously, we want to see the beauty of the flower. Everybody wants to see them flowering and open. Some of them are confounding you at the moment and staying firmly in the ground.
With the orchids, so we don't tend to force much of our plant material. So if we were to try and get it to flower out of season, we call it forcing. And we don't tend to do that with the orchids. In the case of all the orchids that we use, we tend to select species that flower at this time of year. So like any plant, I think people come into the glasshouses and think that they're completely aseasonal, there is no season. But the glasshouses and all the plants that we grow within there are driven by seasons, and when they grow in this environment here, they're driven by our seasons. So you can imagine at this time of year we have lower light levels, and actually the glasshouse temperature is much lower because there's less solar gain. So there are orchids that grow, that flower in our winter, and so we have a reasonable, our collection, we tend to push towards that group of orchids. But it's a good question from if we were to compare orchids that have flowered last year and this year, and what was actually in flower last year and what's in flower now. So we have this spectacular one called Darwin's Orchid. It's called Darwin's Orchid because it has this fantastically long spur on it. And Darwin said with it, he said, well, when he found this orchid in Madagascar, there must be a moth that has a tongue long enough to reach the end of that spur. And everyone said, of course it's not, don't be an idiot. I mean, it's a big long spur. It's what, somewhere in the realms of about 20 centimetres. Anyway, after Darwin passed away, they discovered the moth that pollinates Angraecum sesquipedale, the orchid. And this, we like this orchid because we have a good association with Darwin at the gardens, and usually it's nicely in flower now for the festival. However, it's, well, I would say, some of the rounds are about 2 to 3 weeks later this year, and yet some of our other orchid material is 2 to 3 weeks earlier than we would normally expect it. So, like anything, like gardeners will know outside looking at things like snowdrops, as we talked about when I came in, it's difficult to predict exactly when things are going to flower, but it's absolutely to do with the weather and environment around them.
I've heard people saying that snowdrops, certainly in the south of the UK, are about a week earlier than they would normally expect them to be. And the average temperature, even though we think, oh, it's been really cold recently, statistically, the Met Office was saying that the south of the UK has actually been, on average, warmer this winter, and the north of the UK has been colder than the average temperature for the UK.
That's interesting, because I think if you're out in around the gardens, I would definitely say that this year, and I do have a couple of outdoor areas, this year has...
In your own garden?
Yeah, no, back at the Botanic Gardens. I do the areas around the glasshouses. But I would definitely say it has not been a hard winter this year, because we have, around the glasshouses, we have a lot of tender material planted out there, and a lot of that hasn't taken quite the bash that we normally get from the frosts and snow.
Pollinating these orchids, then, if a moth and its proboscis, or its tongue, can pollinate this one that Darwin found, how do you pollinate them? Are they self-pollinating? You need to take a Q-tip or a cotton bud sometimes and just tickle on the stamens to get things going?
So this is quite an interesting one, because we have vanilla at the garden, and vanilla is an orchid. And we were, a couple of years ago, we had a researcher down, and they taught us how to do the pollination of it. So the first thing to say with orchids, and it's an important one, because orchids are the most popular houseplant, is they don't have free pollen. So you're never going to get hay fever from an orchid. Their pollen is in these two nice little packages called pollinia. And normally they stick these onto the back of the insect or bird that pollinates them. But what we have to actively do is, there's a little thing called an anther cap. So this pollen sits, all these pollen which are in these little bundles sit underneath this anther cap. So we have to knock the little anther cap off, and then we take those pollen bundles and we push them round onto the stigmatic surface, which is a shiny surface just down from the pollen bundles. So we do that for our vanilla orchids, because we're very keen to have pods on them, because it's great to show the public vanilla. We don't tend to do it with a lot of the other orchids, because as soon as we knock those pollinia off, so as soon as we knock the pollen bundles off, the flowers start to go over. So many people will be aware that at home, their orchids' flowers last for ages. And that's because orchids have gone down this route of reducing the amount of pollen they have. And therefore, they want to be very definite about ensuring that the right pollinator turns up and moves it from their flower to another flower of the same species. So they've got a flower that can last for a long while. But as soon as that's happened, there's no need for that flower to then still remain there, and they can go over. So if we were to go around pollinating our orchids, the flowers would last for a lot less time.
This is fascinating, Alex, I have to say. The hot houses, or glass houses, as we should call them, do you actually add any heating in there to get to sort of an optimal temperature?
Yes.
Or just allow on the very weak solar radiation, of course, we're getting in February through the glass? Or
so our glass houses are all heated.
Uh-huh.
And we have everywhere from the houses that deal with Mediterranean plants, which are what kept frost-free, right through to our tropical houses, which have a minimum night temperature of 18 degrees C. So a lot of the tropical stuff won't take prolonged periods below 12, but if we were to keep it in that realm, we'd do quite a lot of damage to the truly lowland tropical stuff, so we need to keep it above 18. So it's those sort of plants that you'll never see outside of a botanic garden, because nobody wants to expend the money to keep an area heated at 18 degrees C.
It's a delicate balancing act then, Alex. It really is, isn't it? To get the right temperature for both extremes of environment, for the natural environment for a particular orchid, then obviously.
Absolutely, absolutely. So the orchid that most people will be familiar with, the moth orchid that we see in supermarkets and most retailers, That orchid in particular is from lowland tropical forests. It likes nice hot environments. It's perfect sort of temperature range between about 18 to 22. But interestingly, talking about temperature, the way that the Dutch, and they're the big growers of moth orchids, get them to flower is they drop the temperature by just 2 degrees C in their glass houses. And they do that for a couple of weeks. And what that does is it provides the environmental cue to say to the orchids, right, now it's time to flower. So this is why when I say, you know, the seasons do matter, and they might be a little bit more, they might not quite have our massive drops in temperature, but they're still absolutely there.
So you've done all the hard work, I guess, getting things ready. There's obviously maintenance to do to the orchids, but you've got this exhibition, which is open to the public now until the middle of March.
Yes, yeah, so we are open, and the Orchid Festival goes on to the 10th of March, and it's a fantastic event. It's that time of the year when outside things are starting to wake up. So, for example, our winter garden looks fantastic in the garden at this time of year, and snowdrops are out. But if you just want that a little bit more splash of colour, a bit more of the exotic, then the Orchid Festival really does provide that. And the glasshouses in general at this time of year have flower all around.
Something to see indoors. And this evening, just a little added extra as well, a glass of wine or two.
Yeah, so we had our Twilight event, Twilight at the Museums, last night, which is a great family event.
And how did that go? How many people came along?
I'm not sure. I haven't seen the numbers yet, but it was a great event. I was there, and it's a really nice event because for us, A, we get families in, and B, we get to talk to the public in general about plants. And it's always fantastic because everyone's so excited to just discuss a little bit more detail than we usually get to pass on.
So the exhibition continues at, it opened this week, earlier this week, and obviously the Twilights at the Museums is tied in with that as well. Till March the 10th, you can go along at the Bateman Street entrance of the Cambridge University Botanic Garden to see Orchids 2018, an exhibition, How to Build an Orchid. By the way, Alex, I have to say, I was quite intrigued by the title. It was almost, felt like you were constructing one. Why did you choose that title, really?
I think we were sort of trying to work on the principle of this taking an orchid apart, or how you might put one back together. If you had to create that standard orchid, what are the key components that build an orchid, that make up an orchid? So, yeah, we were just trying to strip it back to basics, really.
Orchids, beautiful to behold. If the kids are with you, you're listening to this. An idea for you to get along to the University Botanic Garden. Standard admission charges apply. You want to take the children along. Have you also got some educational storyboards?
Yeah, we've got a trail on at the moment in and around the garden. I'm not too sure exactly what that's focusing on, but we have four half-term trails on, and in general, the spaces outside are fantastic at the moment.
Yeah, there's quite an acreage, quite a few hectares, 40 acres, just over 16 hectares of land at the Botanic Garden, and of course a fabulous cafe as well.
Always a good cafe. That makes a good garden, eh?
I think I've advertised it well for you. Actually, obviously, and any money you make presumably goes back into research as well. Does the Botanic Garden work on a commercial basis?
We were both a charity, and we obviously have to cover our running costs, but the major part of the Botanic Garden is associated with the Plant Sciences Department, and yes, science is an integral part of what we aim to do as part of the Botanic Garden.
Alex, thanks very much for coming by and spending some time and having a cup of tea with us this morning. We enjoyed meeting you once again. Come back and talk to us again. I know you're off to hopefully South Africa in the summer. It's got to be planned.
Fingers crossed. If everything comes together, then that will be my summer sorted.
A little science exhibition. Do come back and talk to us about that.
Thank you very much for that, Phil.
Alex Summers there, the plant house supervisor at Cambridge University Botanics Gardens.